For the fans, by the fans, this is the Non-League Football Show with me, Tim Fuel, back with the nation's favourite show about all things below the 92. Talking about below 92, he's not aged that much since he was last with me, so indeed, he is still below 92. Quite possibly, maybe below 92 degrees as well, because it's been a bit chilly in the studio this morning. But I am pleased to welcome back to the studio and the show our very own managerial interrogation extraordinaire. It's former manager at AFC Wimbledon, Chertsey Town, and many more besides, and now retired to the stands, Mr. Dave Anderson.
Good morning. Good morning, mate. How are you?
It's been a while. It's a little bit chilly. I've got two pairs of socks on. It's like watching football. Talking about football this week. But what have you been up to in these last few weeks?
Well, to be fair, I've been out and about. I've been to a couple of games, but I've also been doing the gaffer tapes, which is your idea, which I thought was a good idea, and. We've put a couple out, so I've been working a wee bit on that, and my own personal work outside of this mad game is very, very busy at this time of year. So I've got my head down and let you get on with it. I actually forgot once, didn't it? You know, where I was meant to come in and do it, and you've texted me and gone, "Where are you?" I was like, "Oh my goodness, I forgot." Well, I didn't say, "Oh my goodness," but it's a bit like that, but it's nice to be back in, and I'm looking forward to it.
So a busy time of year. I mean, how did you survive as a manager, combining all of that?
As a manager, yeah, it was mental. You know, I often wonder how I ever manage when I look at it. I go and watch the games now, and it's such a different feel. But listen, managers will tell you know, today and over the next sort of couple of weeks is a big, big time in the season, massive, because you're always worried because of the holiday season. So obviously there's the food and the drink. It changes the routine because you've Boxing Day, New Year's Day, your injury, suspensions, stuff like that, pitches, weather, and it all gets, as if it's not busy enough, it all gets congested, where effectively you could be playing 4 to 6 games in a very short period of time, depending on when Boxing Day and New Year's Day falls. But I always thought, you know, Boxing Day, who eats too much, leave them out of the team. New Year's Day, who drinks too much, leave them out of the team. That was my theory, you know. Listen, with one of my Hendon team, I'd probably would 5-a-side on New Year's Day because they were all drinkers. But it's changed. I think nowadays, you know, managers don't need to worry as much about that side of it because players are look after themselves a lot better. And I don't mean to knock the old school, because you know my feelings of them, but it's not as stressful that way nowadays as it used to be. But they're all getting ready for a busy period, gaffers. Yeah,
it's something that make sure people listen to episode 2 of the Gaffer Tapes with Steve Baker.
Yeah,
bumper at Christmas episodes. Something that Steve touched upon there about the way he grew up as a player and the way he is now. So it is interesting to see how football's changed. You know, we hear so much about the finances and, you know, how there's other pressures and that sort. Yeah. But on the field's changed dramatically as well, hasn't it?
Absolutely. And it is a very, obviously I'm going to plug it because I've done it, but it's a very honest interview, and so was Steve McKim. And if we keep getting that sort of reaction out of managers, we'll keep doing it. But we've sort of said between us, if we think it's crap, we'll bin it. You know, my ego's not that bad. I can live without it. But yes, it is. And I think it'd be good for players to listen to as well, because we're all older. We've all experienced it. And what you feed off the two have done is that they let you know where they feel they've gone wrong as a player, what they would have recommended to themselves virtually. And if you want to get on in this game, these are people who have played and also managed at a top level. Why wouldn't you want to hear that? You know, don't worry about my bit. I try and keep myself out of it, which, you know, it's very, very difficult for me.
For an hour long podcast as the one with Steve Baker, it's probably the least I've heard you speak.
Yes, I know. And it was it was easy because it was good. And the other thing, I mean, we're trying to get a time limit. Steve McKim, I could have talked to for another hour and a half, but we did him just before one of his games. So we literally had 30 minutes. And it was very good of him to do it at that time. We literally half an hour. And I'm sort of regretting that a little bit now because I'd like to have done it a little bit longer. And I might go back to him if we do any more in a few weeks' time or whatever. But Steve, I went and seen it at Horrorborough. And I was there really early. And we started running it. And I'm thinking in my head, 30 minutes. And it was, 58 minutes from? But we've sort of worked out that it's got to be 45, hasn't it? It's got to be sort of 45 minutes. So I need to get to people at where we've got time to do that. But who knows? The next two might be crap.
It's plenty to come in. People can listen on Audio Boom, and Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and
all that stuff. But we've got Alan Devonshire's agreed to do it, who doesn't do many of them. So we'll get Alan in the new year. I'm going to see Jimmy, who's on later in the show. Around about, I'll be doing Alan Dowse, and I'm going to do the two lads at Slough, Anders and Neil Baker, and it's all that stuff. And you know, and listen, if anybody wants to chuck in what they think I should be asking, I'm fine with all that nonsense. But so that's the idea, mate. Yeah.
Oh well, we'll look forward. If you haven't listened, make sure you do listen to the first two episodes of the Gaffer Tapes. We'll look forward to more in the new year. So let's start with a club who have enjoyed great success in recent years but have had a tough start to life in the top tier of non-league football. Currently bottom of the National League but within touching distance of turning it around. And if anyone can, it probably is my next guest. Manager at Chorley FC, Jamie Vermiglio. Welcome back to the Non-League Football Show, Jamie.
Yeah, thank you very much for having us.
Well, it's always a pleasure to have you on, mate. I say bottom of the division, but you appear to have got the ship steadied and adjusted to life in the top tier now. It's so tight down there. I think you're level on points with two others around you. The form table actually has you in the top 10, I think, or top 8, based on the last six games, with 10 points from them. Do you feel that you've got to understand the level that you're at?
I think you could say that, I suppose. You know, we're in games for a lot longer. We've kept the back door shut for most of the games. It's given us an opportunity, but you know, hand on heart, honestly, it's been pretty much the story of our season. The thing that's changed over the last four or five games is that we've been able to take the lead and then hold on to it. Whereas in the other games, you know, they could have gone either way. It has really been that close. And the draws as well could have converted quite easily in some occasions to wins. So I think we're probably getting our rewards really over the last five or six games, with the exception of Stockport, of course. So yeah, we're scoring a few goals and I've been able to accumulate a few points.
Yeah, I can vouch for that. It's funny you're saying it the way you have, Jimmy, because I've spoken recently to Matt Gray, who's at Sutton, and Alan Devonshire, funny enough, yesterday, who's obviously at Maidenhead. And they more or less said they've been in every game they've played. Every game, although they're down around, not so much Maidenhead, but Sutton are down around the bottom four or five. And they're saying that they could have won, drawn or lost every game they've been involved in. So it is that tight, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And I think most teams could say that because, you know, even the games that we've won recently, you know, I'm happy to have won them, don't get me wrong, but they could easily have gone the other way. You know, I could be sitting here with 0 points as opposed to 10. But, you know, the reality is that these games are so, so tight. I mean, last season we were running away with it. We were attacking and scoring again, and you could relax a little bit, but there's no relaxing at all. But what we have done a little bit more is we have stayed in the games a bit longer, whereas, you know, at the start of the season, we conceded quite a few goals in three or four games, where perhaps my naivety and the team's naivety is, well, you know what, it doesn't matter whether we get beat 3-1 or we get beat 6-1, let's just go for it. Yeah. Whereas we're probably just closing up, shutting up shop just a little bit when we concede a goal, so that's not generally happened, as I say, with the exception of Stockport the other day.
Because I actually put down it when I was thinking about what we're doing just before we started. The little note I made here was from top to bottom. You know, the mindset of that that's a part of what you've said is answering a bit of that question. That mindset when your top is right, let's go out, let's get on the front foot, whereas when you go up a level and you now are, I think it was Bob Dowie had a great saying. He used to say, let's not lose the game trying to win it. And I think, and I say your naivety, we've all been there, but that's a little bit of the naivety where you can lose games trying to win them. And I know it sounds Irish, but it actually is a fact, whereas now now you're a little bit more, well, look, let's be in the game after 20 minutes, half an hour. Is that a fair comment?
Yeah, I think it would be. We've started the season with confidence. We got promoted last year. We scored an awful lot of goals, kept a lot of clean sheets, and did really, really well. You know, we'd had some experience playing against the National League teams last year. You know, in Barrow and Warney, we were a good side, and we more than matched them on the pitch that day in the FA Cup, and it gave us that confidence that, you know what, we can start the season on the front foot, and we can go and attack teams, and it didn't quite go to plan, so that just readjustment.
Yeah.
To realign, realign, think, you know what, we've got a point now, let's just try and at the very least keep a point, keep a clean sheet, and let's see how it goes. And we started the season on the back foot because we lost five or six players through injury that we were expecting to start with. I think all those kind of things that can go against you went against us at the start of this season. Last season, we had all the luck in the world, we didn't have any injuries, you know, we had all the penalties given to us, all the decisions were going for us, and you know, now you're really fighting to try and get decisions and things. But yeah, as you say, last five or six games have been a lot better in terms of the results, and the performances have been just as good. I think I could probably count on one hand when I've walked off the pitch and thought, you know what, we've been really, really poor today. Other than that, you know, I've come off thinking, yeah, all right, we may have been beaten or we may have drawn, but we've been in that game and given ourselves a good chance.
And you know, obviously without knowing your budget, you know, you're now in the big league with one of the smaller budgets, which tells me, no genius, but tells me the squad is small and injuries, suspensions and situations like that can be massive blows to you.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, you know, you're missing, you know, I've got two players out with long-term injuries. Mm. That, for me, is, you know, close to probably a sixth of the budget. So you're looking at trying to then recruit and get players in on loan, which is not always easy. And you're looking to try and get yourself a bargain. You're negotiating with teams. Someone comes into, I don't know, the likes of Fleetwood and offers a bit more money, then, you know, Fleetwood are probably going to take a little bit more money. And, you know, there's no excuses here. It's just the fact of the matter is we have got a small budget, we have got small resources, and we are absolutely up against it. You only need to look at the bottom four to see who we're up against, the likes of Wrexham, you know, with the backing that they've potentially got. You know, I don't know the ins and outs, but I was just talking to a couple of managers quite recently. You know, we played against Matlock Town, so I was speaking to Steve Kittrick. I played against a few over the last few weeks, and you know, their budgets in their league are quite competitive, and with some of the teams that they've been with recently are competitive, but they're comparable to what we've got to compete with in our league. So you know, when you look at the resources, we're giving it a good, really good go. And I'm really confident that we can stay up this year. But you know, the fact of the matter is we're up against it in many ways.
Yeah, you mentioned Wrexham there. They're down there in the fight with you, and you've got to play them twice over Christmas, busy Christmas period. I mean, how does that define your season?
I wouldn't say it defines it, but it's a really good opportunity for us to pull away from some of those teams. But at the same time, you know, if the results don't go your way, you could quickly be 7 or 8 points adrift. So it's a very important part of the season. You know, it's one that we're looking forward to. I think all players look forward to the Christmas period, despite what other people think, you know, who aren't involved in football. It's a back-to-back games, and especially when you're winning, or if you're winning, it's an enjoyable part. But the Wrexham, certainly two six-pointers there. And big games as well, you know, I mean, with respect to the teams that I'm about to mention, over the Christmas period, we played against the likes of Bamber Bridge over the last few years. They were our derby. And then Fylde, which is quite a big local derby. But now we're playing against Wrexham. For a club like Chorley, it's good to be, you know, playing against these sorts of sides, the calibre of players they've got and where they've been is, you know, it's fantastic. But we're not just here to enjoy the experience. We want to be having these derbies every year against the likes of Wrexham. So we're really looking forward to it.
I would to make you feel a bit better, I would be saying that with the size of the club at Wrexham are, believe me, their dugout will feel a little bit more pressure than yours. And the other thing, which is true, Tim, and I would say this to McTiernan, you know, there's two things you can't blame a manager for. One is injuries and the other one's the weather. You know, obviously injuries if things are wrong in training, strain. I mean, but if you pick up two long-term injuries and it snows for a fortnight, you can't be blamed for either. And it's amazing what, not so much chairman, but what people blame you for. Jimmy, you get the blame for everything.
Yeah. You know what? To be fair to our chairman and the board, they're fully supportive of what they're doing and seeing how hard we're working and what we're up against. You know, they're realists. Ken Wright's been involved in football all his life. He knows what we're going through as managers and the challenges that we face. And they've been so supportive. I think I'm not sure now statistically, but if you look at the bottom four or bottom five, I think most of the managers in the bottom four or bottom five have been sacked or being talked about being sacked. And you know, that's something that's, you know, there's no pressure on me or on Pretty or Smudge from the board. They're fully supportive of what we're doing and seeing how close we are to getting out of the situation that we're in.
Yeah, I mean, you are Chorley through and through, really, aren't you? You're a player, coach, manager. You've been back there now over a decade, haven't you?
Yeah, well, I first started there when I was 20. That's when I began my non-league career, really. I was just playing local league football until then. And then, yeah, the story goes, I left and then came back. But I've been there now, I think it is 10 years, I think, since Gary Flitcroft took over and I went to play for him. So yeah, I've been around the club. It does mean it, you know. I think you don't get it so much anymore, where the managers are genuine supporters and want the club to do well. You know, when I'm negotiating wages, I'm trying to save an extra 20 quid because it's important to the club. Whereas, yeah, you know, I think, you know, some managers just you go in and you spend the budget fully. But I'm, you know, fully involved with what happens behind the scenes. I know how important it is to save an extra 20 quid, 50 quid here and there. So, you know, I'm fully on board with what they're doing at the club.
Yeah, and you're still buoyant, and you're positive that you can get out of it as well. But I mean, even though it's not been the greatest start playing with the big boys. But as a Chorley boy, I mean, what does that mean to be playing alongside Wrexham and playing in that top tier? I mean, what's the local community's sort of take on everything and the success at Chorley in recent years?
You know what, they're absolutely loving it. I think when you look back on the year that we've just had, you know, getting promotion from a tough league and again against the odds, you know, no one would have expected us to get promoted last season. It's been a really good year for the club. And I think the fans, like all fans, they experience a little bit of success. They want more success. You know, so over the last sort of 10 years since the Flitcroft era, we have had good success as a club and we've grown, gone from strength to strength. And now we've hit the point where starting to lose games, starting to concede more goals than we have in the past. So inevitably the supporters can feel a little bit frustrated generally. But our supporters have been fantastic. You know, they're taking every opportunity and treating it as an experience. They're going to Wrexham. I don't know how many will travel, but I'm sure it will be a lot. A lot of them travel to Dover just to go and get that experience because it's a ground that they've never been to before. They're all, you know, the hardcore Chorley lot who've been there since I was there playing in front of 74 people and three dogs at Rosendale United to play now. It's an amazing experience for them all, but it's been tough. You know, I am buoyant and jubilant and positive about what we've got, but I tell you what, it's really been testing for the lads and for me as a person, as a character, you know, to try and, you know, when you're losing three or four on the bounce, how you think, where's your next win going to come from? Where's your next goal going to come from? And, you know, when you score or you get that 3 points, it means so much more. And you celebrate it like you just won the FA Cup sometimes, which perhaps, I suppose, sometimes look a bit disrespectful to other managers, but it's just so important for us to get some points on the board. But enjoying the highs and the lows are very, very difficult.
Yeah, I think that's that'll never change, really. When I've actually wrote down it, that is a different learning curve. It's a different mindset from, you know, when you're winning six and losing one, as opposed to winning one and losing six, as an example, which can happen when you go up a division, that's important for you, that your staff around you are strong and with you and, you know, understand, and everybody around you understands what you've achieved to be where you are, you know. But if you ever want to talk about how to get over losing four games in a row, just give me a ring. I have plenty of experience of it, believe me.
Brilliant. You're right, though. Like, you know, last year it was easy, and I say that with utmost respect to managers, but it's easy in terms of the lads going out there, they're winning every week. You don't need to think. You don't need to overthink. Absolutely. You don't need to think about players and making new signings and injuries when, you know, everything's going your way. It's a doddle being a manager. I think you're really tested when it's going against you. You see your mettle then, and that's when you need to make decisions. And perhaps sometimes overanalyze, overthink, overchange.
Absolutely. That's why your staff are important. Yeah. They've got to get you away from that stuff. And, and the old saying's true, Jimmy, you learn nothing when you're winning.
Yeah, yeah. I'd 100% wholeheartedly agree with that. And, speaking about the staff, we've got Jonathan Smith, who's a right, solid, steady head. He knows what he's, he knows what he's talking about. He's played non-league, played Accrington hundreds of games, a bit of a legend there. And then also Andy Priest, and, he's been there and done that. It's like having three managers at times. And, sometimes I'm sure the lads are thinking, who is the manager? Which one of you is the manager? Because we've all got a good, good input, all got a lot to say, and we all care passionately about the club. But those two they're like rocks, because it has not been easy. Sometimes you do question yourself, you question whether you're the right person, you question whether especially with someone like me who's wholeheartedly involved in the club, you do think, is it time for someone else to come in and kick on? But they're really strong, and no, honestly, we need to keep going doing what we're doing, and we'll get out of it. Because I am a positive person, I've got a positive mindset, but even the most positive people, that you reflect a lot and probably overly reflect. So I think you're right, having those people around me, including the chairman and some of the players, it's invaluable.
Yeah, I think it's right. And this experience that you're going through now only makes you better. It really does. And to have that sort of knowledge around you is really, really important. And the other thing is that you have to, and it was an assistant, and I've been an assistant, and it's the best job in the world. They care about it as much as you. They think as managers. I think that's essential, that they think they're the manager. They give you what they think, open mic'd, and you deal with that. But the bottom line is they're not dealing with that sort of stress, because there's only one man can deal with that. That is the gaffer, But I'm going to see it. I'm not going to ask him any more things. I'm going to go and see him soon, but we'll talk about that later. Yeah.
But Jamie, I know it's a very busy time, because as well as trying to be a manager of a National League club, you have a very busy job away from football as well, which again I'm sure you do wholeheartedly, and you've probably got a Santa hat on as I'm talking to you. You're probably throwing yourself fully into the Christmas.
You know what? I've got a Christmas jumper on with my flag.
Jamie, thanks as ever for joining us on the Non-League Football Show. We wish you well over the Christmas period and for the rest of the season. We will speak to you again soon, and hopefully you continue that climb up the table. But have a great Christmas.
Thank you very much. Great to chat to you both. Take care.
So Christmas is the time of not wanting to be in the relegation zone. Well, our next guest isn't overly concerned about that. In fact, I would guess he's probably relishing the opportunity. Since moving in at Ipswich United and taking them on after Gary Hill's departure from the club at the start of October, it's been something of a revolution. He's hoping to lift the club out of the relegation spot. So it's a welcome to the Non-League Football Show to manager at Ipswich United, Kevin Watson.
Morning, guys. How are you?
We're feeling considerably Christmassy, I have to admit. We need that oomph. What about you guys? I can hear you're out in the training field there with your lads ahead of a busy Christmas period ahead. Is everybody in fine spirits?
Yeah, they are. I mean, it's been a little bit of a whirlwind for me. Obviously, I came in as Gary's assistant, and then unfortunately, Gary lost his job after only a week. And I was sort of thrust into the position of interim. I told the owner that I backed myself, and I felt if he'd give me a chance that we could turn things around with the players we had. And it's going all right at the moment. So I couldn't be more pleased with what's happening. We do need to strengthen and add a couple of players to what is, I think, a pretty decent squad at this level. We're beginning to turn the points deficit round, which was 7 when we took over, and we're now down to 3. So we're heading in the right direction. And you know what Christmas is like. It's a pivotal period in any season, and the festivities won't be lasting too long for our boys with 4 games over that time.
That's something that Dave and I have already discussed about the modern day footballer. There's maybe not the same concerns over the Christmas period that a manager would have had a few years back.
No, absolutely not. I mean, the modern day footballer You know, they very rarely drink. They don't leave the house. I mean, I'm sitting watching these boys after training, before training, with protein shakes and bars and gels. And, you know, when I played, it wasn't a case of that. It was the case of the manager saying, you know, don't have too many potatoes on Christmas Day and have a glass of champagne with your dinner and that's it. Yeah. But these boys won't even do that, I don't think. Incredibly professional, even at our level. And I'm lucky because I can see that, you know, they're all buying in what we're trying to do. The change of style that I've tried to put on them, which is good. They're bought into it. We're trying to pass the ball. And at the minute, we're getting there. We're not the finished article, but the transformation is on the way up, if you like, as opposed to on the way down. And at the minute, we seem to be drawing teams into the mire that are sort of mid-table-ish by our form.
And to be fair, I mean, you obviously have only spent a short period of time with the squad, Kev, and you're sort of saying you need to add a couple. Are you hoping to do that in January?
What, yeah, strengthen the squad?
Yeah.
Yes, if it is available to me to do so, then obviously I would like to add to what we have. It's got to, the players will have to be better than what we have, and also the right character to fit into what is a very good dressing room. That's really important to me. You know, you could have Lionel Messi in this team, and if he wasn't the right character and was upset in the dressing room, I'd be reluctant. I mean, that's a little bit over the top, but
I'm not sure he's available.
Yeah, I'd have his own dressing room.
No, he's not available.
Yeah,
I'm sure our chairman would probably think he could go and get him. Though, but it's just a good time to be here.
Yeah, just on that point, Kev. It's something I didn't come to the conclusion until very late in my career. We should have thought about it. I think it's a real interesting point that the character within the dressing room is he has to fit in, because you can bring in a great player. If he upsets how the dressing room is, it's detrimental to what you're doing, isn't it?
Yeah, it certainly is. I mean, I was fortunate enough. I was in 4 promotion winning dressing rooms, and that character that we're talking about wasn't there, because under the managers that I had, it wouldn't have been allowed to happen. And even if there was a player like that, they'd be out the door as soon as they got in there.
Do you pick that up when you thought, when I'm a manager, I'm gonna, is it something you made a mental note that it is it something you
oh yeah
you fell
yeah,
upon?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, even with the boys in training the other day, I mean, Tristan's taking training at the moment.
Yeah.
And I was involved in it and taking it the other day as well. And I'm standing there watching, and having Tristan allows me to do that. I mean, I'm an A-licensed coach myself, but being a manager is completely different. And there's a lot more that goes to it other than just coaching. You talk about man management. You're talking about what floats different players' boats.
Yeah.
And yeah, I pulled them after training. I said, look, I mean, Tuesday's a hard day for us. And I said, teams are just picked on Saturday. I mean, we played Enfield in the trophy last Saturday, played extremely well and won 2-0. But I sort of pulled them after training. I said, look, there's a couple there. So Tuesday's a hard fitness day. And don't think it's just the team's just going to stay the same because you played well on Saturday. You know, none of us are good enough to turn it on and off like a tap and train poorly and then go out and play well. So I'm fortunate that, you know, these boys every day do put in a shift. They have put in a shift for me. And that's showing in results. I think it's 2 defeats in 12. As I say, you're never going to claw 7 points back straight away, but we're down to 3 now with plenty of games to go. So yeah. I was always going to look forward to the challenge. And I told the chairman I thought I could get us out of trouble. And we're getting there. We're getting there.
Sure. And I'm always interested in that relationship between being an assistant manager, which I've been, and being a manager, which I've been. Do you think the fact that you were only there as for 1 week has nearly helped you now? Because it's a different relationship, isn't it? Whereas you probably didn't get time to become the assistant relationship. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It does. I mean, I've been assistant to Mick Harford at Luton.
Yeah.
I was assistant with Teddy at Stevenage, Ronnie Moore at Eastleigh.
It's a different relationship, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is, and you find that the players come and speak to you a lot more than the manager.
Yeah.
I've always said the way I'm managers, I'll be around the lads as much as I can, laugh and joke with them, and then as soon as I have to distance myself, I will. But
yeah.
my door, as they say, is always open. I see myself still as one of the lads. And I always said I will speak to players how I wanted to be spoken to when I was a player. Yeah. I see too many managers, too many ex-players, all of a sudden completely change the way they were as players, and it doesn't sit right and it doesn't go down well. At the minute, I'm fortunate at everyone, and the most important thing is the players that's not playing. They're the ones you've got to manage very, very well indeed. It's not the ones that are playing, it's the ones that find themselves out of the team. And at the minute, the ones who have found themselves out of the team are working even harder to try and get in it. So, and the way I work is possession's 9/10 of the law. So if you come in and play well, it doesn't matter who you're keeping out for whatever reason, those players stay out.
That's a brilliant point. You know, I mean, it's a brilliant point, Tim, that people underestimate. Success is about the people who aren't in the team, believe it or not, because one, they can clear off. Two, they can have a crap attitude. Three, they can't be pushing to get back in. Four, they're not buying into it once they're not in the team. But it's a brilliant point, that, Kevin. And I think you're spot on, and it's something that I would say to any young manager, make sure you take care of the people who aren't in the team.
Absolutely. One of our boys 5 weeks ago wasn't getting a sniff. It was my fourth choice striker. He asked to go on loan. But all of a sudden, a couple of days on the trot, I was like, he's caught my eye a little bit. He's working incredibly hard. You know, he's got a little bit of this boy. And I didn't know an awful lot about him.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, he's played himself into the team, and I won't be letting him go anywhere. You know, so that's how it can change. I mean, yeah, he worked incredibly hard. He came up to me about a week after and said, am I any closer to getting in the team? I said, yeah, you are. And I think it was a Friday. Mm. And as he went to walk off, I went, make sure you get a good night's sleep. And he sort of smiled, and I played him the next day, you know, and he's done well for me. Yeah. I'm not going to say he's going to play every week, but making him available to go on loan, he's now going nowhere.
Yeah, and if he comes in with that attitude, the people in the team, they have to react to that.
They certainly do.
They have to, and that's what you're after, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, as I say, the ones that are playing, you've not really got a problem. Yeah. And I say to them, you know, be looking over your shoulders, because I'm now getting players back fit who have been out. And for the first time, possibly on Saturday, I'll have a fit player sitting in the stand, which isn't ideal, but it means I'm getting my strong squad back together that I know I've had. And it'll be the first time, and that person will be disappointed. Yeah. But as always, whenever I leave a player out who's been playing, whether it's before the game or on the Monday or the Tuesday, I'll pull them and have a chat with them and tell them why. There's always a reason. Yeah. And if I need to tell them it's because you were poor, then I'll say it was because you were poor. At the minute, it's never been that. It's been either a change of formation, a different type of player I need in. But yeah, those are the conversations you have to have as a manager. And they're difficult. When you leave players out, it's difficult, but it goes with the territory. It goes with the job.
And a busy Christmas period ahead, so that's when you're going to need the full depth of your squad, I guess, to play some games. Yeah, we always talk about a busy Christmas. You've got Woking on Saturday. Then you've got the double header at Dagenham and Redbridge over the bank holidays with Dover in between. But then you've got the opening weekend of the new year, a trip to Barrow, who were flying high at the top of the. 2020 is not going to get any easier, is it, Kevin?
No, this league is incredibly tough. At the minute, I've found most teams, much of a muchness, to be honest, and my team talk has very rarely changed. And I think results show you on any given day. I mean, Chorley went to Barrow and drew 2-2. We went to Chorley and won 4-0. So on any given day, bottom beats top, middle beats top, bottom beats middle. That is literally what this league is like. And if you can find some consistency, then you gradually start climbing the league. But Barrow, first week of the new year, not ideal for us. I mean, it's end of the world up there. But we've got three and four important games before then.
Yeah.
And we obviously share a training ground with Dover. So as we speak, I'm sort of looking through the fence to see what they're up. I'm not really.
Yeah, of course you're not.
So I know Hesse very well. And we've had a good relationship over the years. And we'd sort of sharing the 4G the next couple of days because the pitches are out of action up here.
Yeah.
But again, Dagenham, you know, they've not won for quite a while. We've got them twice. So really, really important period for everyone at Christmas.
And looking further afield, on the field, you seem to have got everything moving in the right direction. But there's obviously been various news over recent years about off the field things going on at Ebbsfleet. Does that seem a lot more stable to you now, and things moving in the right direction?
Yeah, I'd like to think so. I'd like to hope so. I've spoke to the owner on 3 or 4 occasions. Nice guy, very amicable guy. You can chat to him. He's told me what his plans are. You know, he's backed me. He's been really happy with what I've done. He likes what I'm trying to do. He wants to build the club moving forward. So, yeah, I would like to think that, you know, with his backing, which he has most certainly given me and told me that, you know, I will be able to sign players when it becomes available, that we can move forward and move forward all together. There's certain things off the field that I would like to get going at the club and, you know, get the supporters and the crowd and everyone more involved. But that's an ongoing process. Yeah. It's an ongoing process. You come down to that ground and the new stand's brilliant. We just need to get it right on the field and off the field, and then we'll be flying. And we're moving towards that. I do really feel that we can get this right and move somewhere with this club.
It's funny, just to go back to your point when you're saying it's a tough league and every game you can win or lose every game. We have spoke to 5 conference managers, including yourself, in the last 2 days. And they've all said the same thing. They've all said you could win, draw, or lose. Doesn't matter who you're playing against or where you're playing them. And the margins are minute, which is really exciting for people sitting in a stand. But it must be really stressful for people sitting in a dugout.
Oh, I hate match day. I absolutely hate them because you've done all your work throughout the week. You've set your team up best you can, and then once those boys cross the white line, yeah, you can guide them, but there's no point ranting and raving. You set them up how you want to play, and then it's down to them, in essence. But you're right, yeah. You know, Woking are sitting fourth. We're 23rd. We've drawn with them in the league. We've drawn with them. They equalised in the last seconds against us in the FA Cup. Then we went there in the replay and won. So that's the fine margins you're talking about. 2-2, 1-1, 1-0. Therefore, we're 23rd. Now, the result could beat us on Saturday. We could beat them. It'd end up a draw. But those are the fine margins you're talking about. Therefore, we're 23rd. And that's just consistency. Admittedly, there was a big upheaval here at the club in the summer when Gary had no players.
Yeah.
So he's thrown a squad together, which, fair play to him. You know, there weren't many players here with not long of pre-season left. Hence, probably the bad start. And, you know, when I came in and we were sitting on 10 points, it did look, I think, the team just outside the bottom 4 and 17. So,
yeah,
it was a struggle. But we're getting there. And now, all of a sudden, I say to the boys, look, the carrot is now you could be only in the drop zone on goal difference Saturday.
Yeah.
There's your carrot. There's always a carrot every day.
Yeah.
And that will be their carrot Saturday.
Yeah, momentum's massive as well. When you get the big mole going for you, you get a bit of momentum going, it's amazing what it does. The last thing for me, Kev, is you said something there. I retired at the end of this last season, and you said you hit games. I've said to people, say, would you not come back? I said, I'd come back to manage if I could leave the ground at 2:45. Because I love all of it except the match. So it was just, I can absolutely identify with what you said.
Well, And just touching on, I mean, just go back to the FA. I know you've not asked me, but the FA Trophy last week against Enfield, where we went and won 2-0.
Yeah.
I stood in the dressing room, and I've been involved in football all my career. That's all I've known. My adult life, a kid. And I knew, and I said to the lads, National League teams will go out today against lower league opposition. And I don't just mean the league below. I went, if your attitudes are not right, and you're not professional, and you think you're just going to go out there and have a stroll, you'll get turned over.
Yeah.
And what I was so pleased at was that it was 2-0, but the way we played, the attitude, the professionalism of doing everything correctly, even working harder than Enfield, which I knew we'd had to do, was spot on. And then when I come in afterwards, I said, I don't know the other results, but I bet teams have gone out. And they had to do leagues below and stuff. So that's the sort of thing I'm trying to instill in them is, you know, we train 3 days a week, but in my eyes, they're professionals, and we will do it as professional as we can. You know, there's nothing amateur about what we're trying to do, and as long as I'm here, that's the way it will stay.
And we hope you'll be there for a very long time, Kevin, and we'll get to speak to you again.
And listen, it's brilliant to speak to you, and tell Tristan we said it was brilliant to speak to you and not him, okay?
Okay, lovely. Really appreciate it.
Merry Christmas.
Thank you, Kevin. Cheers.
Bye-bye.
That was good. He came across well. You know, I've been impressed with the managers we've spoken to today, but they just say stuff that... it's a lonely job, a manager, you know, and that, I think that's why we, when we meet up and when we talk and when you get to be friends, proper friends with another manager, that's why your bond's so strong, because you two can identify with what it is. And when certain managers say certain things, which they do all the time here, it just reiterates in my head. I can see, I absolutely understand the point he's making, and people go, why would you hit the game? Why would you be a football manager if you hit the game? You've no idea. You've no idea. We love the game, but it's very, very rarely do you enjoy a game.
And it's, despite all the technology and everything else that we use around us, and being a manager is still about human interaction.
Is absolutely, just as well, because I can just about turn my iPhone on, do you know what I mean, Adam? But you're absolutely right. And it's you can't get a nap to do it. You've got to deal with it. And I've heard stuff today that I've really liked, you know, about how people address people, how they deal with their squad, how the things that we've spoke to Jamie and to Kevin about has been really good and eye opening, hopefully, for some people.
So the FA Cup is still weaving its magic, and as many in the world suddenly realise that the competition is underway, it's time for us in non-league to consider the best from this season's competition. That's not to say it's all over, of course, with two non-league sides still involved and looking to go forward in the FA Cup third round ties. Celebrating being in the third round for the first time ever, there's AFC Fylde, only in their 12th campaign under that name as well. They beat Kingstonian in that all non-league tie in the previous round, and they've set up a trip to Sheffield United on that first weekend of the new year. The other representatives are, of course, Hartlepool United, who caused a cup set of the last round with a 1-0 after extra time win over Exeter City. And they've got a reward of an away tie to the victors of Hayes and Yedding United, Oxford United, who came close against Manchester City in the Caribou Cup. Well, I mean, that's the FA Cup magic still to come, but we've got to decide, or the public have got to think about who should be awarded the factors this season, the FA Cup team awards. And there is only one man who can tell us more about the factors, the man behind the factors, and indeed most of the facts about the FA Cup competition itself. Welcome back to the Non-League Football Show, Mr. Phil Annetts at FA Cup Fact File.
Hi, Tim. Hi, Dave.
Morning.
Phil, now, the factors, tell us, I think we're in our fifth year, aren't we? Yeah. How did it all come about?
Yes, that's right. Yes, the FA Cup Fact File Team Awards, known as the Factors, were launched 5 years ago. They came about because I wanted to recognise the achievements of non-league clubs in the FA Cup. 644 non-league clubs take part in the FA Cup starting from August onwards. But their contribution to the success of the competition is largely forgotten by the time the FA Cup reaches its conclusion or gets to the later stages. And every year, there are memorable achievements by non-league clubs in the competition, amazing results or record-breaking runs. And the factors are designed to commemorate and recognise them. For example, this season alone, we've had more than 100 clubs equal or better their previous best FA Cup run. So you can see what all up and down the country there are clubs who have performed better in the competition than they've ever done before. And I think the factors is the only awards that recognise non-league club achievements in the competition.
Well, that's it, isn't it? We talk about the magic of the FA Cup, and particularly non-league, but you can't imagine many of those clubs coming into the third round, making history this year. And really, as a as much as fans get excited about the FA Cup when their club comes in so late, it's pretty much every year is the same, isn't it? Unless you really go on to a proper run to the semi-finals and quarters. Whereas non-league FA Cup teams, we talk about the money, but it's also the snowball effect that you can have in the local community and football all around. You know, I look at my own club, Haisen Yedding United. We've got a Norwegian supporters club that's formed when Yedding played Newcastle in the FA Cup third round.
Wow.
And they were over again recently. They come over at least once or twice a season to come and watch the team and then watch from afar. And we wouldn't have got that without an FA Cup run.
Well, that's right, yes. I mean, you get onto the world spotlight when you get as far as the third round. But there are many, many foreign supporters of lots of non-league clubs all around the country. And quite often it's their love of the FA Cup combined with news about these teams' performances in the early stages that gets recognition and gets them involved. I mean, the fact is that, you know, we've been going 5 years, and each year there's an increase in interest and involvement by non-league fans in voting for and nominating clubs for factors. So we've had thousands and thousands of people get involved over the 5 years, and it's been growing every year, and hopefully it'll continue to do so.
Well, it's a participation event, isn't it, Phil? It's something that all fans can get involved in. Well, there's a panel of pundits as well, the Gang of Five.
Pundits,
It's like, I was thinking, it's like the subs bench that every manager would be scratching their head and say, do I really need to make an...
It's like the subs in the, when you're playing the County Cup. That's what it's like, the subs, when you drag the youth team lads in for a bit of experience. But go on.
So how's it all going to work then, Phil?
Okay, well, currently we're seeking nominations for the four Factor Awards, and I'll just go through the Factor Awards in a second. But that's nominations from all the non-league fans around the country. I've been communicating it already via my Twitter account at FA Cup Fat File and on Facebook. So I'm pulling together nominations for clubs all the way up till Christmas Eve. People can nominate clubs. And I've already had quite a few in already, but it's always good to get as many as we can. There are four Factor Awards that people can nominate their clubs for. There's performance of the FA Cup. This is a consideration of clubs that have produced a great one-off performance or a giant killing or a fantastic comeback win or even a record margin of victory. So anything like that can be celebrated. And in the past, we've had winners like Chesham United and Barrow, who obviously both did very well in the proper rounds in the last few years. Woking and Winchester City were the most recent winners. We then have the second category, which is the surprise of the FA Cup. This is recognising clubs that have produced the biggest unexpected result or maybe produced a very unexpected feat or cup run against the odds. In the past, we've had winners of Hoddesdon Town, Westfields, if you remember, they went all the way from the extra premier round to the first round. Hereford and Haringey Borough were the winners last season. The third award is a special team award. This is a little bit different to the other awards in that it's designed to be presented to the club that has maybe encapsulated the spirit of the FA Cup. They've done something unique or special in the competition that stands out and has been well regarded by non-league fans. So in the past, we had winners of Hartley Whitney were the first winners. They won the award for, based on their club spirit and their performances against higher clubs in the competition. Lincoln City were the second winners. They won the award for I think having over 7,000 fans at their FA Cup game against Oldham. Hereford won it in the following year. They won it because their fans went the extra mile by clearing snow off the pitch to make sure their game went ahead against Fleetwood Town. And then last season, Cleethorpes Town were the winners, and they won it on the back of their exceptional scoring record in the competition, where they were the top scorers of all non-league clubs. And the fourth and the final award, which is the big one, I guess, it's the team of the FA Cup. And this is awarded to the team that epitomises the spirit and approach of non-league clubs in the FA Cup and achieving something outstanding by their results and their performances. So in the past, we've had the inaugural winners were Didcot Town, if you remember them getting through to the first round. I think they played Exeter. Stourbridge had a fantastic run to the third round a few years ago, and that was recognised. Hereford were the winners a couple of years ago in the second round, and last year it actually went to a team that didn't make the proper round through Dunstan UTS, who had gone all the way from the extra premier round and made it to the fourth qualifying round. You might remember that game at Gateshead. So they're the four awards. We're looking for nominations for clubs against all those awards. Once the nominations are in, they'll be shortlisted, and typically there's four clubs put forward to be voted on, and sometimes eight clubs on the performance one, because I know lots of outstanding performances that have happened in the competition. And those shortlisted clubs will be announced on the day after Boxing Day, and then there'll be the opportunity for non-league fans to vote for which of those four clubs in each award deserves to win the factor.
And so that's the dates to look out for, Phil. Obviously, you know, you've been going five years, the fifth awards. What is maybe the standard characteristic of some of these winners? You know, if people are thinking of, you've mentioned, you know, plenty of names there of clubs that have won in the past, but you know, what do you think is the, I don't know, if people are thinking of clubs to nominate, is there a magical ingredient that you would think that they should be looking for?
I don't think there's necessarily one ingredient, but there are a lot of different factors that people can think about decide on whether they think the team is worthy. For instance, if you've never won an FA Cup game in your history and you've played in it for several years and then suddenly you go on a run to two or three wins, then I think that's quite significant. If you're a brand new club that's in it the first time and you start off with a large victory against an established club, or you win away from home against a club with a long FA Cup history, I think that's notable as well. Or any club that has achieved a best FA Cup run, particularly if it's by a significant amount. So then in the past, they've only ever got maybe to the first or second qualifying round, and then this year they've seen themselves travel all the way through to the proper rounds. I think that's notable as well. And particular giant killing.
Yeah,
I think that's always something worth noting. You know, against the odds victory, if you're down to 10 men or if you've only got a small squad and you've beaten a massive squad. So all of these things can be considered. And I think all of them are worthy in their own right. And it's always good to see the variety in the types of achievements that are allocated to each of the awards.
And to be fair, we should let the punters know that the panel picking these awards is your good self, Tim, Carlene Barker, who's a non-league legend, and Matt Badcock, who's a non-league legend in the paper, and obviously myself. And I would just like to state that I can be bought for not a lot of for not a lot of money or beer. You know, I don't know about the rest of the panel, but please feel free to bribe me.
It's amazing what you can do when you're not on the BBC anymore.
I better say I'm joking as well, isn't it? But yes, but I'm actually looking forward to doing it, because we pay attention to it, nowhere near as much attention as you do, Phil. But it's the ones that will come up that I'll be going, oh, I didn't even know about that, didn't think about that. So it is something that we're genuinely looking forward to having a debate over.
Yeah, I mean, I've decided this year, and thanks for your support, for all you guys who are involved, but in the past I've just run this through a public vote, and as with all Twitter votes, it can quite often get skewed by clubs that maybe have managed to get their fans to get involved more. So I don't want to stop that from happening, so I think that's really important that they do that and get involved. But I think it's also important
to balance it with... Go on.
Yeah, I was saying it's also important to balance it with independent views of what's happened, and work it in a system whereby both sets of considerations are given equal amount of weighting when determining who actually wins the award.
I think that's a fair shout. I can vouch for that, because I remember when I was at Wimbledon, Robert Ursell, who was one of my players, scored a hat-trick against Dunstable in one of the lower rounds of the FA Cup. And he won player of the round, because it went to the vote. And because of the fan base of Wimbledon. Rob pulled more votes than every other candidate put together. And that's and it was brilliant for him, and I was there on the day, and it's a day you'll never forget. But I think you're right. It you know, it's good that it goes independently to, well, people can blame us, but I think it's and I wouldn't say fairer, but if you've got a big support, you would stand a bigger chance of winning. So I can actually vouch for what you've done.
Okay, good. Well, I've taken the model from Strictly Come Dancing, that famous football competition.
You better believe that bit's getting cut out, because I ain't having my name put to anything that's got Strictly Come Dancing on it. So you better edit that bit out, Tim, or we're finished with it.
So Phil, I guess a bit of a downtime for you then, Christmas, or are you preparing the stats for the third round?
Well, of course, I'm already on top of that, as you can imagine, Tim. It is going to be a downtime. I do want to take a break from being involved, but obviously the factors are front of mind at the moment, and it's a busy time for me on that. But, yeah, looking forward to the third round, looking forward to the non-league teams. Hopefully one of them producing, if at least one of them producing an upset.
Yeah.
It'd be fantastic to see. It should be a fantastic Christmas, and hopefully you guys are going to have a great time too.
We are. And just remind people before you go, Phil, how they can get involved with the factors then.
Well, obviously, the nomination this week and up till Christmas Eve, you can do it via Twitter through FA Cup Fat File on an open basis, or you can DM me, direct message me on the Twitter profile there, or you can do it via Facebook for my FA Cup Fat File page on Facebook. Or you can send me an email at phil@facupfatfile.co.uk and tell me which club you'd like to nominate for which award. I do want to, again, thank you guys at the Non-League Show for your support of not only the factors, but also for the FA Cup Fat File and all the stats that I've produced over the last year of 2019. I think it's been brilliant to be involved with you, and I'm humbled by your support.
It's been brilliant to have you on, Phil, because it gives me plenty of the stats and facts to wow my friends. I'm not sure if they're always wowed by them, but it's always a pleasure to have you on, Phil. We wish you a good Christmas, and we'll speak to you once the factors begin to unravel.
Yeah, Merry Christmas, mate.
Yeah, Merry Christmas to you guys and everyone who follows me and everyone who loves the FA Cup. Have a great season.
So let's round off the show and head on over to Non-League Paper Towers once again. And senior writer at the Non-League Paper, David Richardson, joins me once again. Welcome back to the show, David.
Hi, Tim. How are you?
I'm good. I was going to start off, something like it was the weekend before Christmas when all through the house not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse, because it's been a fairly quiet week in non-league, and we say that some weeks, and then everything goes mad. There is a story that sort of broke this at the start of the week. We're recording this now on Thursday afternoon. I think there's a fans forum later on this evening, so who knows what the story may be come the time of release of this podcast. But AFC Bury, now they're like potentially a Phoenix club. They made an application to the Northwest Counties League. It's one of those, we often have debate, rumour about clubs that maybe are going out of existence or maybe no longer in existence. It's weird because AFC Bury is established as a company, almost as a Phoenix to Bury FC, who still seem to be in existence as well but aren't playing anywhere. So it's a real limbo position we're in here.
Yeah, it is, yeah. There was Bury were in sort of the High Court on Wednesday, where the club wasn't wound up. A debt had been paid, which meant the club continued to be in existence. But yeah, like you said, obviously a couple of sort of days before that, an application went in from Bury AFC, a Phoenix club or group as such have set up this sort of new entity, really, to try and have a club, in place for next season. But yeah, obviously, like I said, it's sort of a bit of a limbo period at the moment because Bury FC are still in existence, And you know, the ground is rare and functional as such, but it's sort of a difficult situation. I think the plan at the moment is that they have sort of three options. Plan A being Bury FC continues, and obviously they get the club off Stephen Dale, who owns it at the moment. You know, they get Bury FC back and continue, you know, like that. Obviously, they would have to start somewhere in non-league, and I'm not quite sure where that would be, but that is one option that they're still trying to explore to get Bury FC back. The second is to, should the club be liquidated, is to effectively rescue the ground. I understand they have someone who is in talks to do that and try and take the ground, so then a club could then play out of there. And then the third option is, I wouldn't say sort of worst case scenario, but it's effectively Bury AFC, which is to sort of start again from the bottom. And I think at the moment their current plan would be to ground share at Radcliffe, which obviously, you know, it isn't ideal to have a ground share, but I agree that you always want to have your own ground. So those are the three options. And obviously, it's not ideal that Bury AFC is sort of apply for this at the moment, but in order to try and have a football club that fans can support from the start of next season, these sort of three options need to go alongside each other. Now, it may be a case that, you know, Bury FC is saved, and in that event, Bury AFC wouldn't then happen, because you don't want a situation where you've got two football clubs playing under sort of the Bury name at the same time. So they have to try and explore and sort of crack on with these options all at the same time, really. And then lastly, just sort of to sort of finalise that current plan, in January, there's the club will be back in the High Court again, where the CVA is due to the tune of just under £1 million. Now, whether Stephen Dale is able to pay that off is not known, and should he not be able to, then the club would be liquidated, and then the Forever Bury, which is the supporters club and the fans, etc., will then have sort of a better picture of what they then can do in terms of trying to acquire the ground or continue with Bury FC.
Yeah, as much as there's so many unanswered questions, in a way, I suppose there's an advantage that there is so much time. But normally we see this in the last 2 weeks after a season's finished and everybody's frantically trying to get applications in, get the right forms in place. So at least they are covering the bases. It makes sense to cover all the bases and have a plan B and plan C.
But it does. I mean, obviously, no one sort of can really predict what's going to happen. You know, it may be a case that, you know, the debt's paid off in January and Bury FC is still going under Stephen Dale. And then, you know, if anything, that would perhaps cause more problems. I don't know. But that's the thing. You don't really know which way this is going to go. So they're sort of, like say, covering all of the bases. You know, time is on their side in terms of getting these sort of applications through, etc. But it also isn't really, because, you know, they're in this limbo. They don't really know what's going to happen. And sort of quickly the summer and pre-season will come around again. And if you are starting a completely new club, like we've seen AFC Wimbledon have done and have risen through, it takes a lot of effort, a lot of organisation. It will obviously all be down to the fans to do that, getting a team in place, getting a board in place, you know, even, you know, things in order to put football games on at a club, at a ground. So, it's going to be sort of a continuing sort of saga, really, for the next few weeks. But that's sort of, I think, where it's at the moment and what they're trying to do.
Yeah, it is almost as if, looking from afar, we can watch and maybe create some sort of template that's ready to go for unfortunately, it's likely this is going to happen again, isn't it? So, this thing where I'm constantly saying that there should be a crack commando squad at the FA to advise us, maybe they should be keeping an eye on, the options available and, maybe a step-by-step guide the sort of work that Supporters Direct used to do in the early days, but I guess the situation with funding and that for them, and it's not something that they necessarily take on to the same level. It is interesting to watch from afar, but I'm sure probably not as interesting if you are a Bury FC fan.
No, and I think the fans have really been through over the ringer, really, haven't they, over the last sort of 6 to 12 months. I think part of this is sort of wanting light at the end of the tunnel. I think by putting the application in, they can see sort of the future as such. But at the same time, there are fans who don't want that. So it is a little bit of sort of a split fan base, I think, at the moment. But again, it just comes back to not really knowing what's going to happen with Bury FC and what the future holds for that. I think once that's sorted out, I mean, hopefully it's soon, but I'm not sure. It's an awful thing to say, really, in that, liquidation may be the best thing for the club. But I think, maybe in this situation, it might be in order for them to realise what they can do going forward.
Mm. And as you say, there's differing approaches within the Bury FC supporters fan base. And then you look on message boards, forums, Facebook groups and everything concerned with non-league, and you see there's differing approaches from non-league fans as to, if there is a Phoenix club or if Bury FC start back up, where do they start up? Is step 6 too high? Is step 5 too high? Where do they start up? There's even been rumours about maybe franchise an existing club further up the pyramid, which I'm sure certainly wouldn't go down well with fans. But there are so many potential avenues, as you say, and I'm not entirely sure as to whether the regulation is there to cover all these situations as well, or whether it's just a case of, someone will take an opportunity and move forward. And as you would expect, try and get the best possible solution for themselves, however that impacts on the rest of the non-league.
Yeah, I think, like I say, it's, non-league fans or football fans in general perhaps don't like sort of seeing teams rise through the league, as maybe we've seen over the last few years, maybe like the likes of Fylde, Salford, Fleetwood, if we're going back a few years. But ultimately, it's where do they start anyway? Then do those fans just not have a football club, or what can you sort of really do by starting up? I think it would be step 6 they would be going into in the North West Counties League Division 1. That is very low down, and clearly, should they win promotion each year, it's still going to take years for them to get back to where they were. Now, should the fans be punished in that sense, really, to have to start at that level, having gone through something that hasn't been their own fault as such? I don't know. That's a sort of another question you have to ask. But, I think non-league does give the opportunity for these clubs to rebuild and rise again, as we've seen. Obviously, the example of AFC Wimbledon, as we know, getting into the Football League and sort of the great story behind that. And Bury will perhaps see a similar opportunity. But, in my opinion, I think they've got to try and do everything they can to keep hold of sort of the history of Bury FC, which I understand that they're trying to do, but obviously that's proving to be very difficult, as we've seen over the last 6 months alone. And even now, it may be too late. Maybe too late to say that we don't know.
Mm. And that's, that's a club that struggled at the high levels because whatever reasons that they couldn't afford to pay their way, and then we look down step 3, a club that are doing really well, got a great track record. We see Paul Town this week are looking, turning to crowdfunding to get them through a cash flow crisis because of the weather, and they've only, I think, only played five home league games this season, so they're appealing to their fans to, you know, help them with the coffers to get them through the winter months. And you're looking ahead to the weekend. I can't imagine that they're the only club that are fearing this with the, you know, potential weather that's going to be coming in the next few weeks.
Yeah, interesting to see that really from Paul. Obviously, it's a problem. You always sort of get a couple of clubs sort of around this time of year at the start of the new year with sort of similar things like this. You know, fair play for them to coming out and being honest and open about it and trying to sort of nip it in the bud sort of as soon as possible. But yeah, it just goes to show really sort of how vulnerable these non-league clubs are. You know, a lack of home games. I mean, was it since September you said they hadn't played at home? I mean, that's sort of pretty unheard of, really. And you know, that's obviously the issue for non-league clubs. These games aren't getting on. You know, it suddenly becomes very difficult to run a football club. And yeah, like you say, it's like hopefully the weather clears up, but it hasn't looked great so far this week, and it doesn't look particularly much better going into the weekend. You know, is another case for 3D pitches. I don't have to bring that old one up again, but no, it's clearly a very concerning sort of issue, really, isn't it? And again, it's sort of another maybe point to the get as many games in at the start of the season as possible, really, so you don't sort of get into this situation.
Yeah, and obviously every week we talk about the managerial merry-go-round. I see Lee Dynan's back involved in football. The old Kingstonian Whiteleaf manager has gone to East Grinstead Town, which is an interesting appointment. And also, yeah, we often talk about managers, you know, not staying around long or not being given opportunities. Good to see that the joint managers at Chesham United, James Duncan and Michael Murray, have been given an extended deal there, because they have done very well since they came in from Potsdam Town. I think they moved from the bottom of the table last season up into you know, mid-table, and then they've had a great season in the Southern South this season, and certainly pushing for playoffs if not the title up there. So that's good. And then I think a story that you've maybe also been looking into up at Bamber Bridge. Talk about experience on their coaching side there. Jamie Milligan's brought in Brett Almeroyd.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I spoke to Jamie, I think, only last week about him going in there. And yeah, now he's got another sort of very experienced former player going in with him. I also saw a pretty funny video, I think he tweeted this week, of a sort of one of his players seeming to believe that it won quite a lot of money on a fake scratch card, which went fairly viral around Twitter. But no, it seems like he's trying to sort of call in some experience to help him out there in what is his first management job. And yeah, I don't think you can sort of get too many people with experience in non-league or in football, really, in terms of playing career around this sort of level as Brett Almeroyd. So interesting appointment there.
Yeah, and as we are heading into the Christmas period, you know, games coming thick and fast. What about you guys at the non-league paper? Anything else that we can look forward to reading about on Sunday?
Yeah, there's plenty going in on Sunday as well. We just hope that the weather holds out. We've got plenty of games to get on. We may be having to fill the paper a little bit on Saturday afternoon to make up for some lost pages. But no, what is planned at the moment to go in is we're looking at the FA Trophy. There were some great ties in midweek. I spoke to Steve Kittrick at Matlock Town, who his side managed to beat National League Chorley on penalties, having conceded a last-minute goal in extra time to draw level at 2-2. And then they managed to win that after a replay, which is a really impressive result. We also hear from Hales Owen, who had a good win over Bradford Park Avenue in their FA Trophy tie. And we've also got a really nice spread feature from David Borkham for his Through the Lens feature. He's the effing town in the Essex Olympian League Division 2. So a really nice sort of picture spread of his travels there and the sort of story of the club there.
Good stuff. Well, we look forward to reading all about it over the weekend. And while I've got the opportunity, I wish you a very happy Christmas and look forward to speaking to you again very soon.
Brilliant. Thanks very much, Tim, and to you and the Non-League Show team. Thanks for doing a great job with the show. And yeah, I look forward to coming back on sometime soon, but probably in the new year.
So that's it for this week. Well, thank you once again to Dave Anderson.
Listen, it's lovely to be back. You know, it feels like it's been an age.
It is. It's not even Christmassy in the studio. I've avoided all the tinsel, no paper hats. They're far more exciting things to do. Obviously, a big thank you to all of our guests and a big thank you to everybody for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us throughout the season, joining throughout the week on social media at Non-League Show.
Sorry, the only thing I was going to say is, and I've just remembered in the notes, is that Chasham have given James Duncan and Michael Murray, they've extended their contract. And I just think that it's worth mentioning that I think it's a real good move on the club's part. They're young managers. I know Michael, I know Muzzer quite well. I don't know James that well, but I just think that they've acted because they've seen people, they've seen what the job they've done, they've got them committed to them. As a manager, as a young management team, that will encourage them. They'll feel confident about it. And I think it's a good move by both parties. And, you know, it was something we wanted to mention, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was an interesting move when they came across from Potters Bar Town, where they had a good couple of seasons there. Yeah. And starting out, I think they came in, they were bottom of the table at Chesham and finished 10th last season. Yeah. And then they've just continued that this season and certainly up there in the shout of the playoffs in the Southern Premier South. And as you say, we report far too often of clubs getting fed up with managers, you know, often managers getting fed up with clubs as well. Yeah. But it's nice to see that faith and just a little bit of backing.
Yeah, absolutely, and it should reward, and I'm delighted, obviously, because I know Muzzer, but I just think it's football clubs could learn from it. You know, back you if you got a good young manager, make him feel wanted.
Football clubs could learn. They could learn from the Non-League Show. They could learn from the Gaffer Tapes. Of course, you can find both of those on the Audio Boom on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Deezer, TuneIn Radio, via your smart speakers and all good podcast aggregation sites. Do listen, download and subscribe. Have a great Christmas, everybody. Thank you and goodbye.
Merry Christmas.
Jibber Jabber Production. JIBBA.